You're listening to the Sprues and Brews podcast, your weekly podcast looking at all things Warhammer.
Hello, 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 and welcome to episode 84 of the Sprues and Brews podcast. My name is Dave, and I'm joined once again by Matt.
Hello.
Jay.
Hello.
And you sounded surprised, Jay.
That's because you normally go, I'm Jay. But you were quite enthusiastic about introducing me today.
And we also have another special guest marking his first appearance on the podcast. It is Pete, a.k.a. Roombrush. Welcome, Pete.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. It's not every week we have a Golden Demon winner on the podcast, so it's a pretty special podcast this week.
Thanks. It always feels a bit weird when somebody goes, oh, Golden Demon winner. Oh, yeah, it's me, isn't it? Oh,
So we are going to be chatting to Pete a little bit later on about his painting exploits, as well as discussing our top three things we love about the hobby, which has been quite popular with the community as well. We also have a fair helping of news this week, Matt.
We do. We've got some good news this week as well.
You're getting good at these.
Change.
Yeah, you're getting better at these good news segments instead of bad news ones, Matt. I'm very impressed. And we'll be wrapping up the podcast of all the community top three picks. But before we go through all of that, we'll discuss what we've been doing in the hobby, as always, since the last podcast. Matt, do you want to start us off?
Yeah, I've managed to get quite a bit done this week. So I have built a load of Adeptus Titanicus Knights. Over the last few weeks, I've been doing my Legio Ignatum, and I've really enjoyed doing the Titanicus stuff. So I had some knights, I had a load of sprues that weren't built, so load of them all built, sprayed up, ready for painting. I also built some White Scar bikes as well, because I'm sure as regular listeners will know, I've been talking about doing some Heresy in the near future. And yeah, I want to go for a fully mounted White Scars army, because that'd be really cool.
That would be so cool.
Yeah, those old plastic bikes are absolutely terrible, though. they're not fun to build, but they're built now. So I've got some Forge World jet bikes on the way. They may slowly replace me bikes as me compulsory troops choices in me White Scars. I also built a Warlord Nemesis, which is a gorgeous, gorgeous Titan. Yeah. So this is the awesome Psy Titan from Forge World. It's pretty much a stock plastic warlord with a different head, and it's got the kind of big rig on the back of it where all the psychers live and presumably die soon after it fires its main gun. So looking forward to getting some paint on that. And then, yeah, I have almost finished my giant, the first part of my Sons of Bayamas.
The last giant, as we've called him, because he was the last one you could buy online.
Yeah, I'm hoping to get another two of them tomorrow, but we'll see how we get on.
Yeah, fingers crossed. Yeah, he's looking ace, Matt. I really like him. I mean, you've done a lot of work on his face, but you've like you say, you've very nearly finished him now, haven't you?
Yeah, it just needs some highlights on the kind of cloth bits now, and then base him and good to go. So yeah, I've really enjoyed painting him. It's for such an old model, it's a really nice kit.
Yeah, you've done a really nice job on the flesh, because flesh over a big area is not easy.
Cheers. I mean, I have cheated a little bit. So I used the airbrush. I put dryad bark down where all the shaded areas would be. Went over the whole lot with Kislev flesh and then kind of built up the Kislev flesh on the higher areas to give you that gradient.
Yeah.
And then the face, it's just purple washes and red glazes really to build up that kind of ruddy, hungover, beaten up kind of look that he's got.
Yes.
There was a cool mission, wasn't there, in the Warhammer online game with the giant that was hungover.
Yeah.
Well, I have, in fact, actually, I realised before we started recording that I haven't posted a picture of my completed infiltrators for Adeptus Mechanicus, so I'll do that after we finish recording. But yeah, I finished my unit of five infiltrators finally. However, I have realised that I've run out of Lead Belcher, which is always a problem, because it's a paint I've been using quite a lot. I thought I had a spare pot, which is why I didn't panic, but it turns out that that's empty as well. So always check your paints, folks. So I'm hoping I can pick up a tub tomorrow, otherwise that puts a real dampener on the rest of my Adeptus Mechanicus stuff during lockdown. So I'm going to try and pick up a part of that. I think I hadn't finished my Imperial Fist Captain last week. So he's now finished, which I'm really happy with. He was really cool to paint. And just prior to jumping on Skype to record this, I've got some old Ultramarines that I painted, which I wasn't very happy with. They were painted quite a while ago. And I thought, oh, can I get away with respraying them, or will I lose a load of detail? So I've sprayed 5 Intercessors and a Primaris Librarian and a Lieutenant, and they look fine.
Awesome.
It's covered it really, really well. So Operation Distraction Imperial Fist is back on.
Amazing.
So I can paint some more of those. So I might make a start on them tomorrow night. Aside from that, I very, very nearly finished my... I can't remember what they're called. Really spiky, dangerous terrain for Age of Sigmar, because I still haven't finished that from that I started like 2 weeks ago, so I could record the single player battle report for Age of Sigmar. So hopefully I'll be able to get those done this weekend. You did mention, Matt, that you've missed playing Warhammer. Well, I'm actually hoping to have a game this weekend.
Oh.
I have somehow managed to talk my wife into rolling some dice with me.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. This needs to be top of the news headline, surely.
It's not going to be a big game, but, you know, it's going to be interesting. I'll let you guys know how it goes. Probably,
oh, man, if she beats you, Dave, that'll be so cool.
I'm thinking maybe a big monster and a couple of units or something, just something quite straightforward.
That's weird, you know. Liam was texting me actually, asking me for all kinds of strategies and tips to be Adeptus Mechanicus. I think she's playing like proper tournament list.
Yeah.
I'll give her the Death Watch dice. They always roll.
cruel.
So that should be fun. That should scratch my rolling dice itch as well. And who knows, she might enjoy it. I don't expect her to, but you never know. Jay, what have you been up to in the last 7 days?
Well, I'm still thinking about you playing Leanne at Warhammer, actually. Can you stream it or something like that, Dave? I'd love to see this. What have I been doing this last week? So I have finally finished my first unit of Blood Angel Intercessors. So I've got them built. The plan tomorrow is to get them sprayed, and then I can start painting them. That's probably what I'm going to be working on this weekend. I was going to try and paint up my Sanguinary Guard this week, but I want to use the Retributor Armor Spray first on them, so I haven't got any. I thought I had a tin of it, but I don't. So that's on my shopping list tomorrow, if I can get into the online store in the morning and order that. So instead, what I've done is I've started to put some paint onto the Dark Angels Inner Circle Knights. So I've got them undercoated. Then I've painted them all Abaddon black again to just get that consistent black colour. I've started... it's a bit funny. I was going to start highlighting and shading the black initially, but then looking at all... You find this with Forge World 30K models. The details are very small on the model, and there's lots of it. So I've decided to... do all of the details before I start doing any shading. So all of the metal rims, the little trinkets, the chains, that sort of thing. And then go back and do the black. So shade it with the browns and then highlight it. I've got one who's probably about 75% done. So just my first test model, really happy with how he's going. So hopefully I can carry on working on the squad next week and get those painted, because I'm really looking forward to Forge World opening up again, so I can add some reinforcements to these guys.
Yeah, definitely. It looks really good, Jay.
What is the first thing on your Forge World shopping list?
Well, it's shopping list, like emergency supply drop. I want Dark Angels Leviathan Dreadnought, definitely. But I also want a load of Blood Angels Day of Revelation stuff, which is the sort of army I'm going to try and build for our Horus Heresy. I don't know. I'm going to have a look and see if it's cheaper to buy the bits separately or to just buy the Angels tier Destroyer squad, because I'm going to use the arms and pistols and backpacks on Primaris Intercessors and Reavers.
Nice.
To keep them all sort of Primaris scale, so I can use them as Assault Marines and Destroyers in the two different systems. I've had a look online, and it looks like actually the old style arms for the old Space Marine actually work quite well on the Primaris. There's not, it's not too noticeable the scale difference.
Okay. It's more tighter than new models, isn't it?
Yeah, that's it. I mean, I've got the old Sanguinary Guard arms on custodian torsos, and you can't even tell. They look perfectly right. So I'm not too worried about the old size of the old arms. We'll see. I've got some old Marines upstairs I'm going to just have a quick play with, but I think they'll be okay. Oh, I did try and convert some Dark Angels Primaris using some Sequiter bits. Are they Sequiters or Sequiturs?
Sequiturs, yeah.
Didn't go very well. I abandoned that after about 2.5 hours of shaving and cutting and slicing and blue tacking. I thought, no, this is too much effort. I'll just stick to Terminators for the Dark Angels.
At least you tried.
At least I tried. That's it.
You had an idea and you went for it.
Exactly. Yeah.
I think that's fair enough. Sorry, Jay.
No. Carry on. That pretty much sums up what I've been doing this week.
Okay. So, Pete, whilst you've been in lockdown, what have been your sort of main hobby projects?
Well, I was going to say, I've not actually been in lockdown, but because they've changed the bus times, that's sad and boring as that is, I am actually getting about an extra hour and a half hobby of an evening.
All right, cool.
Which is, you know, a nice little benefit. But I've dug out a load of Primaris stuff that I've had in the cupboard, and I'm painting them up as the Sons of the Phoenix.
Ooh, so nice.
That's the sort of a white with purple arm and shoulder pad and knee pad. I've been sort of messing around with that. I've been doing a unit 3 Inceptors, blokes with big jump packs. And I've also dug out the tokens from my Adeptus Titanicus rulebook. So I've snipped all them out. There's blooming millions of them. Snipped those out, tidied them up, and I've just started to paint those and sort of dry brush them all up. So... I am a lot slower than you guys. You know, you guys seem to rattle through the hobby so quick. It's so impressive. And I'm sat there thinking, I've painted an arm in the length of time you painted a whole army, you know.
Yeah, but that arm's going to look amazing, isn't it?
Just looking at the Sons of the Phoenix, I didn't recognise the name. They look really, really cool.
They have a really clever little background to them. Basically, it's one of the Ultima founding chapters, so they're all Primaris. But there's a hint. There's supposedly a successor chapter of the Imperial Fists.
Okay. However,
supposedly there's a hint that they might actually be have been created from gene seed from the Emperor's Children.
Well, I was going to say, looking at them, they look more Emperor's Children-y than Imperial Fists.
So it's not been confirmed, but of course. When Belisarius Kul made all the, you know, the Ultima founding, and he didn't have any restrictions on what gene seed to use. And then you know, Gulliman turned around and said, "You are only using loyalist ones, aren't you?" Oh, yes, of course I am. So, but it, like I say, it's just one of those things. There's not that much background about them. There's sort of a couple of pages worth, and that's it. So it's quite nice to paint something that is quite different.
Gives a bit of freedom for your own kind of like lore to them as well, doesn't it?
That's it, definitely.
I suspect you may be getting a visit from the Adeptus Custodes soon.
possibly. So, yeah, one of the quite nice things, I'm not planning on making a whole army. It'll be sort of little kill teams and just models for fun. But one of the things they've actually written down is that they're quite religious. And they go in shouting rites and things like that. And there's a hint that there's quite a little following of you know, sort of religious zealots and things. And it's kind of, that's quite a nice thing. You could do a few conversions for, you know, some flagellants from AOS, etc. So who knows what will happen with it, really.
Mm, awesome.
Sounds like an ace project.
It's a nice little palate cleanser. What I find is when I've been working on one big project for sort of 2 or 3 months, you just need something completely different that you just jump in, and that's all you paint for a little bit. And then it just eases you back into, so when you pick up your big project again, you don't feel, oh, I don't want to do that.
You're a bit more refreshed.
Definitely.
Yeah. Excellent. That's really cool. I think that brings to the end of our little introduction to this week's podcast. We have the news coming up next. So, Matt, you have promised us some good news this week. So fire away, sir.
Yeah, I do have some good news. It is nice when it's not all doom and gloom for change. So, well, first of all, we've seen some new Adeptus Titanicus models. The new Cerastus Knights, the Acheron and the Castigator. Mm-hmm. So this is the variant with the big flamer and the variant with the sword and bolt cannon. These are really nice models. I mean, the 40k ones are really nice models, but I'm looking forward to getting some of these to add to my my knight army for Titanicus. You're a fan of these, aren't you, Jay?
Yeah, I've loved the Castigator. I've always wanted one of those. One of those and the Lancer. Of course, you can get the Lancers already, so I will be picking up a box of these, I think.
Awesome. So it says they're out soon, so whether these were due like the week after lockdown or something. But yeah, hopefully these will be quick off the mark when we get back into the real world again. Over the last few weeks, Games Workshop have been kind of re-releasing kind of old supplements at a bargain price. This week, they've got Shield of Baal and Warzone Fenris. So I believe these were the expansions that were at the very end of the last edition. We had the big Blood Angels versus Tyranids battle box, and we had the kind of Space Wolf versus Thousand Suns expansion, where we got the Plastic Magnus for the first time, I believe.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, they've put these in a bundle for a bargain price, so if you want to catch up on any lore that you've missed, you can pick those up at the minute, which is pretty cool. But then the really, really good news. Games Workshop have now opened their warehouses. Happy days. So they are currently working their way through any of the old orders that have been made prior to the lockdown. So obviously, as we know, the Saga of the Beast expansion and Battle Box was due to be released, and they closed the warehouse because everyone had to go home. So not many people got hold of them. I think a few might have sneaked out early. But yeah, majority didn't get them. So they've been working through those back orders, getting all that stock out. And yeah, tomorrow, on the 1st of May, the Games Workshop web store will open. So this is really, really exciting. Now, obviously, they have a few kind of things going on because it isn't really business as normal. The factory is still closed, so they won't be producing any new stock at the minute. I think they'll just be working through the warehouse and kind of selling what's kind of currently sat in there. Mm-hmm. So, you know, lots of stuff will go out of stock quickly, I imagine. Obviously, certain things are going to be more popular than others. They have said that there's going to be no new releases yet. Now, it could be that in, I don't know, a couple of weeks, maybe they open the factories and they start producing sprues again. Reading between the lines, that looks like that's what they're doing, but they're just starting with this to kind of clear the backlog first. Obviously, a lot of independent stores have probably got massive orders in. So, yeah, it's all a question of how much stock they sit on, because I can't imagine they sit on that much stock, really.
No.
So there will be a few changes to the website tomorrow. There will be a queue system. We've seen this in quite a lot of online stores at the minute, where you're going to sit in a queue and then you can do your shopping. You don't have to rush. You're in there as long as you want. They have said if you're inactive for half an hour, it will kick you out and you'll be back in the queue again, though.
Yeah.
So, yeah, don't try and log in first thing and then leave it in a separate tab for the rest of the day, because you're just going to have to queue again.
Yeah.
Because you can't have stock delivered to stores because the stores are closed, they have cut the free shipping threshold down to £20, which is really good. So pretty much whatever you're ordering, you're going to get shipped for free. Because paints and glues are going to be super, super popular, there's a limit of 3 per colour per order. So, you know, you can't go and get 10 Abaddon Blacks. I think to make sure it's fair, because it's an external company that produces their paints, and I think they're currently making hand sanitizer. With this stuff, when it's gone, it's probably gone for a little while at least. I think they're just trying to make sure it's fair for everyone to get their hands on it. And they have said that shipping will take a lot longer than normal. I think first class Royal Mail's like 5 days at the minute, plus the time of them actually picking the stock. So you're probably talking a week if you're lucky to get hold of it, but at least you're going to be getting some toy soldiers. Sources also say that Forge World store isn't opening yet. That's going to be at a later date. I imagine that Forge World sits on even less stock than kind of Games Workshop proper. A lot of the stuff's kind of cast toward when it comes in, so obviously there's not people in the factory to do that. So yeah, at the minute, you won't be able to order any Forge World stuff, which is a shame, because I wanted a Bone Grinder Giant for me and Gargants. So I'll have to wait. So yeah, so what I'd recommend is, if you want stuff, you probably want to put in an order tomorrow, because I imagine by the end of the day, a lot of popular stuff has probably gone already.
Yes.
Now, unfortunately, podcast listeners, by the time you listen to this, it'll be probably been open for most of the day. Hopefully, there's enough left for you to pick up. It gives me a chance. The only reason that is so it gives me a chance to buy at least a pot of Leadbelcher to tomorrow before you all listen to this podcast and jump online. Completely selfish reasons.
Now, a lot of the independent stores will already have their orders on the way. So, Element Games, for example. Give them a shot. You might be able to get hold of your stuff from them because I imagine they've probably had quite a big order from Games Workshop to kind of fill up their racks beforehand.
So, to
support kind of these independent stores, Games Workshop have brought out a super duper limited edition, rarer than any bloody model at the minute because it's going to be really hard to get hold of, limited edition Catechin Colonel, who looks a little bit like Carl Weathers' character Dylan out of Predator.
Just for a little bit.
I'm sure, you know.
Now that you mention that, Matt, he does look close.
This is one of the favourite models I've seen from Games Workshop. It is so good. It looks like him. It's got a bionic arm where his arm's shot off by the Predator in the film. It's a nice little touch to it.
Yeah.
Well, we've been talking all week about how we would love Games Workshop just to revamp the Catechin line in like a little expansion box set or something like that.
This is the second Catechin model we've seen. The other one was, I think it's a new store model, which again is going to be super hard to get hold of unless you happen to be lucky enough to be near a brand new store. But this does make me think, have we maybe got a kind of Catechin versus Tyranids, definitely not inspired by Predator, battle box on the horizon?
I'd really like that to be the case.
Because they could use this to bring the old Catechins up to date. They redid the command sprue and the heavy sprue, and they look really good compared to the kind of really chunky, big, thick-armed Catechins. Yeah. And at the same time, they could throw in a new plastic lictor or something, because that seems to be the goal with a lot of these battle boxes, just kind of plug in some of the gaps in the line.
Well, did you notice, though, that the binoculars he's holding is one of the rumour mill pictures?
Yeah.
So I'm wondering whether this model was actually originally designed to come out with something else, which puts more credence, I think, towards a potential Catechin re-release.
Yeah, I think the good money is on that. I hope they do a general release this down the line. It could be an alternate sculpt of my first thought is it an alternate sculpt of, you know, a guy out of a battle box that was maybe due to be one of the exclusive models for the golden ticket holders for Warhammer Fest?
Could be, yeah.
Because it's been super limited stock. I think the most that indies have got is like three of these each.
Yes. Yeah, I've heard the same. It's sort of three or four, I think some have said.
Yeah, so, I mean, they're already on eBay for ridiculous sums of money. It's a nice gesture from Games Workshop because it lets those stores get some revenue from them. Mm. I think a lot of people are going to be disappointed they can't get it because it is such a nice model, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm hoping to get hold of it, but I think he is going to be very hard. Like you say, I hope he gets some kind of, even if it's quite a long time down the line, he gets some sort of more public release.
But at the minute, it's a nice touch to let's face it, some of those stores are going to be struggling because a lot of them exist by selling Games Workshop stock, and they haven't had any for a few, months now, have they? Yeah.
No. And in fairness, a lot of them have got tables that go with the shop, and they haven't been able to use those. So I think there are some stores that have really struggled.
Yeah. So it's good. It's good to see Games Workshop. There's been a bit of negative feedback, I suppose, online from certain places on the internet. But no, I think it's a nice touch from Games Workshop to do this.
Yeah.
And then finally, we've got some video game news, Dave, haven't we?
We do indeed. So, every month, Xbox Live Gold members get four free games, two Xbox One games and two Xbox 360 games for free. As long as they're Xbox Gold subscribers, they can play these games. Next month, May, they are bringing Warhammer 40,000 Inquisitor Martyr to Games for Gold. So, from the 14th of May until June the early, I don't know, can't remember the
June
date.
The early.
June the early. You'll be able to download, as long as you download the game within that time frame, then that game is yours to keep as long as you keep your live membership going. And I didn't realize as well, until I did the post on the website, that if you have Game Pass, then you also get access to that. And as long as you stay a member of Game Pass, then you can play the game. Now, I've been so close to buying this game on many occasions. So I'm really happy that I'll be able to download it for free. It's very much inspired by Diablo. Yeah. And I love the Inquisition. Mm. So what's not to love?
Perfect game, Dave. Yeah.
Perfect game.
Just, yeah. It just sounds wrong when you say that, Dave. It sounds suspicious. Why would anyone love the Inquisition?
Because I'm an Inquisitor. That's what it is. Codex Imperial Agents. So
even the Inquisition don't like the Inquisition, so I don't understand how.
So, yeah.
So that's all the goodies we've got this week. You know, maybe this time next week we'll be talking about, you know, the factory reopening, new releases coming out. It's definitely
Lubin F elves.
Well, this is it. Gosh. You might get your hands on them at some point in the next month or so, Jay.
What?
It's engine war for me. That's what I'm waiting for.
Yes.
Yes. Right, and on that sort of really good bit of news, we're going to take a slight pause. We're going to come back with our next segment. Okay, so we cannot have a podcast with a Golden Demon winner live on the show and not discuss a little bit about painting and... what led you to winning your Golden Demon, Pete? First of all, what model did you enter?
It was the Forge World Acastus Knight Porphyrion. So it's the big 40k scale knight that's kind of the biggest one you can get.
The baby titan.
That's the one, yes.
It's such a gorgeous, gorgeous kit as well, isn't it? I really want one of these.
It's not just that it looks lovely, it was a joy to put together. There's certain kits, and I'm sure you've all had it, that you've looked at and you've gone, oh, I'm looking forward to this. You put it together and it's a bit of a pain. The Porphyrion wasn't. The Porphyrion just literally almost put itself together.
Oh, nice.
It was one of their earlier CAD designed ones. So, of course, everything fitted perfectly. Because when you cast resin, it shrinks a little bit. So all that had been factored in. But yeah, I saw the Porphyrion first at one of the Heresy Weekenders. And originally, the Porphyrion was smaller. It was designed to fit between the Cerastus and the Questorus sides.
I think we've seen that one of the open days that we went to. And yes. They definitely blew it up a bit, didn't they?
And they increased it by basically another 2 inches on the top, at least. But when I saw it, I just went, I nudged my mate who sat next to me and went, I want one. I don't care. I want one. And it's one of the few models that I've actually bought on the day of release.
Nice.
And to be honest, it was never bought as a Golden Demon project. It was bought because I really wanted one. Mm. So I did that, and over a period, I think I worked out the other day, it was about 10 months in total, I painted it up. And then towards the end of it, it was getting to sort of February time, and my mate, who had, funnily enough, was the one who was sat next to me at the weekend, and went, you're going to put your knight in? And I went, oh, no, there's some bits I need to do. And I'd managed to mess a couple of bits up. Oh, no, I don't. And he just looked at me and he went, Pete, you need to put your knight in. Okay. Well, and that was it, really. So I finished it off, put it in, and somehow or other, I managed to pick up a Golden Demon.
That's so cool. That is a hobby achievement and a half.
Without a doubt, yeah. Yeah, I never thought it. It's one of those ones that, as I've been in the hobby for coming up 3 decades now, and even when, as a lad, you're looking through White Dwarf, especially when they used to have the supplement with all the Golden Demon stuff in, and you look and it's, oh, I'd love to win a Golden Demon, and you never think it's going to happen. So literally, it was when my name, you hear that. The way the process in Golden Demon works is you put your model in the cabinet, mm-hmm. and then as the day goes on, you become more and more anxious. You keep going past the cabinet, and you have a little slip next to it with a number on that corresponds to one in your pocket, and you get little coloured stickers, and each coloured sticker corresponds to a certain thing. So you've got one that means it's of note.
Okay.
You then have one that says it's been photographed, and then you have the third one, which is the critical one, that says it's made the cut.
Nice.
So basically, the first one means you've got a pin badge. The photograph is just so they can, because they can't take all the photographs in one hit. They just do it a little bit at a time. But like I say, when you made the final cut, you go, oh, I stand a chance. this is, okay.
Something gets real.
Yeah, yeah. And you're kind of thinking, this is bizarre. Well, it was the first year they'd ever done commended cards. So you had me and there was another chap who I met, Dave, who also picked up a demon. And we both were going along. We saw our models on the top shelf with this commended card next to it. And we were going, what's that? What? I don't understand this. And somebody walked past and they went, oh, it means you've got a demon. Walked off. No. No, you can't. Well, then your name gets called out on the tannoy and you're just looking around going, this is weird. And then you have that weird floaty feeling where you kind of think, am I dreaming? Am I going to wake up in a minute? But yeah, so like I say, it's just, it's the weirdest experience ever. So yeah, I was going to say, and then you go down to the main sort of stage area and then they read, you know, get to each category and read names out. And then you find out what you've won. So, but yeah, I was going to say it's a phenomenal experience by any stretch of the imagination. And for me, it was apparently my face was a picture because I stood there and I'd only put my Porphyrion in. So I knew I'd got a demon in the vehicle category.
Yeah.
So I stood there and, oh yeah, Warhammer 40K vehicle. Okay. And bronzes, and they read out the chap's name. And I went, that's not my name. What? Oh, I've got a silver. Well, then they read the silver out. And I went, that's not my name either. What's going on here? And there was part of me that just went, have they got it wrong? Are they going to read somebody else's name out for the gold? And I'm just going to be stood here like a lemon. But no, it was kind of gold. And when you pick your demon up, they take a awkward photograph of you because you don't know what you're meant to be doing. And you get given an envelope. And in that envelope, you get invited to a winner's day up at Warhammer World.
Oh, wow.
Which is, it's not something they sort of advertise a lot because it's, you know, if you win a demon, it's a nice little thing. But it was amazing. Basically, it was like a mini open day. So you went up, you put your models into a display cabinet so everyone could have a look. Mm-hmm. You got a chance to talk to various members of staff. You got lunch provided. You got a guided tour around the exhibition hall, which was nice. Amazing. I was talking to Harvey Snape, who was at that point working for the Warhammer World team. And he was talking about the various challenges they'd had and what's coming up. And, you know, it's just phenomenal because there's lots of things you don't know. As you just walk around the exhibition, you go, oh, that's nice. Move on to the next bit. So having somebody there, you can go, so what about this? Oh, well, there's so and so and such and such. That's good. So, and that kind of was the day. I think it was a Tuesday. It was a really random day. So the whole demon experience was phenomenal. But also in the letter, you get you get an invitation from White Dwarf to participate in their winners competition. Mm. And what it is at that point, you were given a theme. So it was the witch for 40K. So, and basically what you do is you think about what you want. You agree that you want to do this. Send in an email to the White Dwarf guys with what models you want. They provide you within reason the models. Mm. And then basically you assemble and you hand your model over to be photographed, and it went into the cabinets at the following Golden Demon. So like I say, it's just beyond belief. Very much so, yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was going to say, the staff that they had, what was really strange was normally when you, and I'm sure you guys are the same, you go to an open day and you talk to these staff and you look at these staff as they're the experts, they're the people who've worked their way to that position. Well, you almost had the tables turned, because some of the staff were talking to you as if, wow, this person's kind of, they've achieved something I'm never going to do. And it's kind of, it's a real weird flip, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Had you entered Golden Demon before? Was it your first time?
No, I had, I've done two Golden Demons before and got nothing. And basically, it was years ago, I'd entered, back in the square base days, I'd entered, it was a squig and a goblin that was awful, to be honest. I've still got it in my cupboard, and I look at it and I go, yeah, I have come on a lot. And then the other one I did was a Space Wolf Contemptor Dreadnought, the original Forge World Contemptor, and I customised that and did all sorts of different bits. But with that one, it was back in the day when there was a different set of judges, and they still had things like halogen lights in the cabinet. So certain models, and I painted my Dreadnought really drab and gritty and grimy, so you stuck it under a light and it just went bloof, and you couldn't see any detail on it at all. So it was very much a case of, oh, that's fine. So, no, I was going to say, that was kind of the third thing I'd ever entered. Mm-hmm. But I put, what was it? I think I did 5 entries last year and picked up some pin badges for them. So, you know, it's I hadn't kind of put anything the quality of my Porphyrian in since. So.
Okay. Had you, because obviously Warhammer Fest would have been this upcoming weekend.
It would have, yes.
Did you have any plans to enter it this year?
I did. I decided to go all out. The little deer armor I did for the White Dwarf Winners Challenge really spurred me on. I've always been very much a person, I paint models that could be used in game. Even though I'm not going to use them in a game, I like that potential. Whereas painting that, it was a little necromunda deer armor, and painting that really kind of spurred me on and sort of took me back to when I started in the hobby and seeing all the Mike McVeigh deer armors and the Dave Andrews ones. And it was kind of, So what I was doing was I decided to make a Caradron Overlord Skyport.
Oh, man. That's such a cool concept.
So it was strange because I had a few different ideas, because I had an ironclad tucked in a box that I started to put together, and I thought, I quite fancy putting an ironclad in. Spoke to a few people, came up with a few different ideas, and to which some of them they said they're rubbish and awful. And I went, I quite fancy an ironclad. And I thought, I don't really want to put it into like the monster category. Mm-hmm. I thought, okay. I know what I'll do. I'll do a diorama. Well, what you don't realise is that the ironclad is massive. So my diorama is basically a foot by a foot by a foot. It's huge.
Jeez.
But I kind of did a little Twitter poll because I'd come up with a couple of other ideas, and everyone on Skyport, and I went, oh, that was the one I thought was least interesting.
That's the one I'd have probably. I may have even voted for it, to be honest.
Yes.
But, I mean, that's it. With the it's unique, isn't it, and quite novel. No one would have seen anything like before. That has appeal. Yeah. So yeah, it would have been cool to see that. I imagine we will see it at some point.
Oh, definitely.
Not this weekend. Send over some pictures. So I'm sure Dave will put them up on the post when this goes live.
Yeah, most certainly will.
I was going to say, because I'm tackling it as two projects. So you've got the actual ironclad itself, and then you've got the Skyport. And the Skyport is fundamentally assembled. So it uses a mixture of 40k terrain, the Sector Mechanicus stuff, and lots of scratch built, but UPVC. So it's basically a bit like foam board, but solid plastic. So it's all, and it's, you've got a curve to it and sort of various supports and stuff. It's a bit of an engineering project when you look at it underneath, because it's got like metal supports and rods and stuff, so because it's the whole thing is floating. I'm going to put like a layer of cloud on once I eventually get it done. But when they postponed or cancelled Golden Demon for this year, I looked at it and I went, I've been working on this solidly for about 3 months, I'm just going to take a bit of a break. So it's kind of it's nice and safe downstairs at the moment on the dining table. But I was going to say, I looked at it the other day and went, actually, I'm fairly far forward. You've probably got another, I suppose, 6 to 8 weeks left to do on it. Mm-hmm. So, but that'll probably be a winter project, because I always think that big projects are really nice when it's miserable and wet outside, and it's warm and toasty inside.
Yes, definitely.
Providing you've got your undercoating done. That's the kicker. You have to make sure you've got to a stage where you can spray it outside, and then you can work on it indoors.
I really like it. I think it looks fun. It's going to be brilliant once you've finished it. And I really like the scheme you've used for your ironclad as well.
Yeah. What is it? Barak Thrung, however you're meant to pronounce that. So it was quite. I enjoy painting red. Red's one of those colours. I know some people struggle with it in certain ways, but I've always enjoyed painting red. So it was quite nice to go back to it, because I painted a Legion of Grief army last year, and that's all blue. So it was quite nice to go back to red, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Red armies tend to be the best armies, I find. I'm not biased in any way.
Of course not. No.
I'm looking at the picture of this guy put now, and it's so cool, with a little kind of telescope and the clock above the door. It's really, really nice. I can't wait to see this done. So you aim in to kind of enter this next time then?
Yes, that's the thinking. I made the conscious decision this year that I was happily put all my preview posts up online. So a lot of people have this mental, you know, thing where I can't share my Golden Demon project. And I think it comes back from years ago where social media and thing wasn't that popular and that common. So the few people who used it, as soon as you put a picture out, everybody had seen it. So whereas I think with the new judges you've got, each thing is looked at in its own respect. So like I say, for me, I just went, I might as well share it to everybody. And that way you also get a bit of feedback. So when people look at something and go, that looks awful, people quite happily tell you it looks awful.
Yeah.
for good or bad type of thing. But I just kind of went, well, I might as well. Why am I not going to share it? You know, if somebody copies it and does a better job than me, and wins a demon and I don't, well, they deserve it because they've done a better job than me.
You've still inspired it, haven't you?
Exactly. And I think because I've been doing it long enough, people will go, that must have been inspired by what Pete's done. Yeah. So you kind of still get that little bit of infamy almost that goes with it.
that's a really, really nice way of looking at it. Out of interest, Matt, have you ever entered a Golden Demon?
I haven't, no, and it's something that I was going to do this year, but alas, Warhammer Fest is no more. But yeah, I think I would like to enter something. I wouldn't expect to win anything, but just to submit and, you know, the chance to, you know, get maybe a little bit of feedback on, you know, what's gone right, what's gone wrong, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I would always say, anybody who's ever said to me, oh, I fancy doing it, my answer is, do it. I tend to do, last year I did what they term a shelf grab, and I went along my shelf and I went, that looks okay, I'll put that on a base, that looks okay, I'll put that on a base, oh yeah, that'll do. And I literally dropped in, like I said, I think it was five or six different things, and went, boom, there we go, what's going to happen? You know, it'll either win it's not going to win a demon, or it's unlikely to, but it might pick up a pin badge. And like I say, I was fairly fortunate, I got 3 pin badges out of it.
That's cool. Mm-hmm.
And some of them, to be honest, I can look at them. I'm very critical of my own work, but some of them I looked at and went, actually, if I painted that now, I could do it better. Mm-hmm. So I think if you kind of look at it, even if you just pick random models up to put it in, the whole experience of putting a model in and seeing your model with these other beautifully painted models is just, you can't really explain it until you've done it.
Yeah.
I always liked your Golden Demon tale, Jay, because you've entered Golden Demon.
Yeah, I think I've entered Golden Demon twice. I've entered once with a Wood Elf Noble. I had never got any pins or anything like this. It was more for the experience, and it's good. It's just you do get a sense of achievement just seeing it in the cabinet with everyone else's work. So it is a good experience to enter it. And then I also entered, I believe it was a Salamander's Dreadnought. And this was the one where we took, was it at the Birmingham NEC, I believe, and we turned up, it was raining, and I went through the wrong door for the...
we've all done it there.
Yeah. And I went inside, and they said, oh, no, you can't come in here yet. And then we looked outside the windows, and it was lashing it down. They said, no, you can stay in then. So I was actually entry number one that year.
Nice.
Yeah, I remember getting really wet waiting outside.
I was just inside. I put my model in the cabinet. I think they took it off you in them days. And then I wandered around the rest of the halls for another 45 minutes while I was waiting for my friends to come in.
Yeah.
Whilst we were all getting pneumonia.
So, Pete, have you done any of the kind of painting events at Warhammer World?
Yes, I've done. I was fortunate somehow to get into the... what was it? It was last year. It was the heavy metal object source lighting weekend. It's super limited. There are only 16 spaces because that's all they can fit into the room. Literally, is they've gone, right, we can fit four sets of desks with four people on, right, 16, that's it, 16 tickets. And literally it's a frantic click, 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 click on Eventbrite to try and get one of these. But I would certainly, I did it, it was the March after I got my demon sort of a 12 month ago. Because in fact, I collected the Porphyrion from the exhibition at the same time.
Yeah, because I think it was the weekend I was at the Throne of Skulls.
That's right, it was, yes.
Yeah, I'd bumped into you because I think I'd been looking at your knight and I was like, that's yours, that's awesome.
I saw your Volgarath because I think, that's right, on the Saturday, the painting bit had finished a little bit before Throne of Skulls because I came out, hunted you round. And I went, I don't know what your face looks like, but I know what your model looks like.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, they're if they do run them again, I would certainly recommend anybody who'd like to improve their painting, it is worth doing that hands down. Just to explain the format, basically it's 2 days. You get your models, your paint included, which you take home. And they GW supplies a tile, which you actually take home as well. They supply painting handles. They supply a booklet and all the paints you could imagine. And they set up the light. You got those beautiful Daylight Company lights over. Mm. And it's a two-day thing. Each day is completely different. So on the first day, you have two of the heavy metal team. Normally it's Max and Aiden. Mm-hmm. Teaching a specific subject. So for me, it was object source lighting. And we had three sections. So we painted the plasma glow on a Space Marine bolter, or a Space Marine plasma gun. We painted like fire on a blue horror. And then it was the eye lens on a Marine helmet. Nice. Even though they don't normally do glowing eye lenses, that it was just to demonstrate how it worked. And Max and Aiden each took one of those things and went through, and it wasn't just right, put this paint on your palette, do this. It was the whole range. It was theory behind it as well. So, you know, when something if you paint object source lighting, one of the real common things, actually I'll probably go back one step further. Object source lighting is where you paint a light. So you paint something like a bulb, and then you paint the corona type effect where the light falls onto the objects around it.
Mm-hmm.
So the theory behind that is your light source should be super bright, and the light that's being cast should be lower light. Whereas the common mistake is you might paint your bulb up to a bright yellow, a lemon yellow, and then you put lemon yellow on the surface. And it's kind of, no, you could have a mirror and it would still be dimmer than your light source. So
yeah.
There was lots and lots of little tips and tricks that they went over. And the theory on, you know, you make sure you actually do your object source lighting at the end. You paint the whole model up with edge highlights the lot, and then you do the actual effect. So that's the Saturday. And you can ask questions and do things. The Sunday is actually, for me, what is worth the money. Because what you do is, on the Sunday, you have a third member of heavy metal come along. It was Nat Slim, who sits at the front of the group. And then each of you has an hour slot with Max or Aiden to ask whatever you want. Wow. You get taken off to a separate room. They have a range of paints and models and stuff, and you can literally go, right, I'm not very good on this, or how do you paint this, or it literally is, it's just free choice.
That's really cool.
It's just phenomenal. Even an hour, it's phenomenal how much you can actually pick up and absorb that you can then come away with and practice. I bizarrely, because I always knew that my brush, my airbrush work is okay, and I can do the odd edge highlight without a problem. But I always knew what I would broadly term my brush work was could do with a bit of polish. Mm-hmm. And so I went in going, I need to improve this. Well, I came away, I hold my brush differently now. Oh. You know, I've been painting for 20 something years at that point, and I now hold my brush in a different way that gives me so much more control. Which means I can now do the fine edge highlights. And just to confirm, when look, you see one of these pictures on Facebook, Instagram, etc., and somebody goes, oh, it's been photoshopped. I can confirm it's not. the little, on the Primaris Marine helmet, do you know you've got the tiny little vents?
Yeah.
And you look at them and they've got a highlight all around the edge.
Yeah.
I can confirm, because I saw Aidan do it, that he just picked up his brush, put it in the paint and went, boop, boop, and just painted a perfect sharp edge highlight around it. Wow. And it's kind of, yeah.
Some people are way too talented at painting, aren't they?
Yes. But we did work it out at one point. On average, even if an heavy metal painter doesn't paint at home, which is rare, each heavy metal painter puts 1,500 hours worth of painting in just at work. Huh. Nat was saying that she goes into work early to paint a model. So she puts an extra hour in the morning. She paints over her part of her lunchtime and she'll go home and paint. So wow. She's putting in 2,000-3,000 hours worth of painting a year. That's why these people are the best in the world, you know. Yeah. And in fairness, it goes the same for people who do painting for a living. The number of hours you put in, practice does make it, you know, does improve things.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I put a blog post up on the website. It was a good few weeks ago now. I'm charting my sort of painting exploits because I've not entered a Golden Demon and I'm some way off that yet. But I hope to one day. And I think, like you say, just with practice, anybody can paint well, really. And I think the tools are there now as well to make it easier to get results like contrast and different things like that.
Definitely. I also would say that there's no wrong way to paint. For me, there's been a few sort of big, I won't say revelations, but a few big things that I've gone, and it's kind of using the right size brush. It sounds the most ludicrous thing ever, but most people, and I did it for years, where they've gone, I want to paint this really detailed, so they pick up a size zero brush. Mm-hmm. Well, why do you need a size zero when you're painting the whole of the model one colour? You pick up a big brush, half-inch brush. You don't, so it's picking the right brush for the job. You know, you don't need a point on your brush if you're just doing washes. Mm-hmm. You know, but if you're doing an edge highlight or some you know, sort of freehand, you do need a point on your brush. So it's very much a case of looking and going, right, I've got this whole range of tools here, what's the right one for doing this? And that could be contrast is the right, you know, a bit of contrast paint is the right thing, a wash, a layer paint, or whatever. You know, there's so many things out there. I think anybody who gets into the hobby now is so fortunate to have this plethora of, you know, tools to their, you know, disposal.
Well, even the tutorials now, back when we got into the hobby, it was like, here's an undercoated model, here's with the layer on, and then step three is a beautifully Golden Demon painted model, you know.
That's it. Yeah, it's like the this is the way you draw a horse's head. Put two circles and now you've got a horse's head. What?
Yeah.
I think, and it's not Games Workshop are smashing out of the park, I think, with all their videos. But I think you can use them as a stepping stone because there's lots of Patreons out there. There's lots of people doing Twitch who are amazing painters. And don't be afraid to steal bits. I say steal, borrow, the way certain people paint things from lots of different people. Develop your own style. Mm. You know, just because Darren Latham paints in a particular way, you might not like that.
No.
So go, well, actually, I like the way he does his metallics, but actually I prefer this person over here. I prefer the way they do their armour or whatever. Yeah. You know,
we've got people like Louise Sugden who just throw colour theory out the window.
Louise's painting is just amazing. And I don't know, have you ever watched her paint? No, I haven't. She has a tiny... it was at the Heresy weekend of last year. You had her and Mark Bedford sat next to each other. Mark was doodling and Louise was painting. I think she was doing her first squat, and she has a wet palette, and she puts the tiniest dot of paint on this wet palette and just basically works it into oblivion. And then she puts another tiny little dot. So she's got such a unique way of painting. And like you say, the colours, she just... How can you highlight pink with blue?
Exactly.
What?
Like staring into the warp.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
That's really cool. I've really enjoyed chatting this into this much detail about painting. Like I say, I mean, I've got a lot to learn, but I follow sort of, you know, people on Twitter. I'm always asking Matt and Jay's opinions on things. Even my local store manager of GW, and of course all the YouTube videos. I mean, before I started painting my Imperial Fist, that, you know, I thought, right, I think I'll do this with contrast. Let's see what results people have had and what calls you've used with it and stuff, how they've applied it. And it's really good. It's helped me massively. So
yes, I do think there's a confidence boost as well when you actually get a model or an army or a unit or whatever painted and finished, and you go, oh wow, I quite enjoyed that. I think that gives you a bit of a leg up to want to try the next thing. It's quite easy to get into the habit of, and I, like I say, my Space Wolf army has never been finished. Everything's always been part painted because it took me so long, you got bored with it. Whereas I think now, because you just need to push yourself on, even if you're not enjoying it, just finish it, put it away, and then you can get on to the next thing. And it just, you know, but there's ultimately, if you're really not enjoying something, don't finish it, put it away, you know, pretend it doesn't exist,
because
it's not purgatory.
No.
I do find it strange when, and I know a lot of people who paint armies, which is kind of a different discipline to display painting, I feel. People who paint armies go, oh, I've really not enjoyed painting these 900 skeletons or whatever. And it's kind of, I really can't think of anything that I'd enjoy less than forcing yourself to do it just because you want to put it on a table. But like you say, I think now with contrast especially, you can actually churn through those a lot more quickly.
Yeah, I mean, I see Chris Peach as one of my kind of hobby heroes, because I do like to kind of churn through armies. And it may not be, you know, three different highlights, Golden Demon Standard, but I like to think they look all right as a whole as an army.
And let's be honest, it's appropriate for armies. You know, like my original Space Wolves, back in the day when I started, that was kind of my 40K army of choice. And I took forever to paint them because there weren't that many people around me that played. So I threw myself into the hobby. But actually, a friend of mine, his term is the 3-foot rule. If you put something 3 feet away and you can't see it, you've probably wasted your time.
Yeah.
Because if you're playing for the tabletop, that's what you're playing against. You know, that's the way you see your model. If you're painting for display, you do want it to be able to look a bit better close up. So it's very much a case of working out what you want to paint. And each person is different and you can have different projects. You know, I've got my contrast army is nowhere near the standard of the Marines I'm painting at the moment. But that's cool because I painted a 2,000-point army and I played with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Awesome.
Very cool. Yeah, that's thank you for that insight, Pete. It was very much appreciated. Hopefully we can go away and take our painting up to the next level, and we'll be discussing our Golden Demon winning entries next year. So fantastic. Right. Well, I think that wraps up that part of the podcast, but we're not quite finished yet because we do have our top three coming up next. Oh, we do love a good top three here at Sprues and Brews. And this week, we're going to be looking at our favourite three things about the hobby. We will be reading out the community top three picks at the end of the podcast, but let's do our picks first of all. So, Matthew, would you start us off with your third choice?
I will, David. So, my third choice of the thing I like most about the hobby is the kind of camaraderie and the spirit of a big group of people all coming together to enjoy some Warhammer. So, you know, you go to a Warhammer Fest and there's all like-minded individuals all enjoying the same thing, or the kind of buzz at a tournament. It's just, it's hard to describe that kind of feeling, but just, you know, nerds having fun, I suppose, is the the short version.
Now, just geek out.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's some, you know, not going to lie, there's some kind of negative types lurking around the internet in some places. But I like to think on the whole that, you know, the group spirit of the Warhammer community is really, really strong at the minute.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I fully agree with that, especially on, say, Twitter. I think there's such a good community spirit on there. It's really good to see. Jay, what's your third choice?
My third choice is the universe and the settings, all the background and the stories and the history. I mean, if you take Warhammer 40,000, over 30 years old, and the world has just been that developed, and there's so many cool little stories. I mean, you've got the main story arc of the Imperium facing off against all of its enemies in this harsh galaxy, but then there's so many cool tiny little stories that spiral off like a big spider's web. Sometimes I sit down and I try and explain them to my partner, and you just get, you're talking for hours and hours and hours going down rabbit holes. I mean, you're going from, like, you know, the campaign books in the Horus Heresy and all the background there to tiny little paragraphs that might appear in the side column of a codex somewhere. Really, really cool. So yeah, it's all that stuff. I mean, I'm a big fan of, like, the Lord of the Rings and all of the universe that Tolkien created. And I mean, I get just as much enjoyment out of the universe that Games Workshop have created, to be fair.
And I think that's one of the things that's made it so successful, that it is like a living, breathing universe they've created.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To the point that if they do anything that goes slightly off canon, the whole community is like, whoa, this doesn't work. So it's become their own worst enemy, probably, in some cases. My third choice is list building. I love writing lists and trying to think what would work. I mean, I have won a tournament. No, I haven't won a tournament. I mean, I won an award. Sorry. What I meant to say was I won an award at a tournament. It was a wooden spoon, which shows that my army list building probably isn't very good. But I do really enjoy... I'll sometimes sit in bed with a codex or a battle tome and just be writing lists and stuff and thinking, oh, that, you know, that'd be quite cool and I'd love to build an army like that. Yeah. I suppose there's a little bit of math hammer in there as well, where you're thinking, you know, is this better than that? I quite like that. Something I want to start doing again is when we were growing up, Jay, when we used to write, you know, our first armies, we used to just like scribble them down on pieces of paper and be all our workings out with points and stuff. That was all part of the fun as well, you know, pre-battle, working out what you were going to take. And I've gone a little bit over in points.
I still did that. I've got a notepad with all my army lists that I scribbled down, because I loathe using battle scribe and the like. I just like, I don't know, there's just something about creating your army list on a bit of paper that appeals.
Yeah. See, I was going to say, the first game I properly played was Necromunda, so of course everything was done on paper.
You made
an Excel spreadsheet with all your gang roster in, and you scribbled it down and then typed it up because it was illegible. And
You know, you give everything an upgrade, then you realise you've gone 40 points over and you start crossing out Power Fist. Because you can't afford that anymore. Re-totting up that character. Right, I've saved 40 points there. I really enjoy that as part of the hobby. Pete, what's your third choice?
Mine is the fact there's always something new to learn. So be it for me, a painting technique or something like that, but also new rules, new game systems. Funnily enough, my bedtime reading at the moment is the Titanicus rule book.
Yeah.
So for me, it's definitely, there's so many new things, and to be honest, Games Workshop's quite unrelenting at the moment, that, you know, there's just so much out there.
Yeah. Mm. Too much makes my wallet cry.
Yeah.
Just too much stuff. Your second choice, Matt.
So my second choice is kind of Games Workshop's interaction, the new Games Workshop, if you will. So this is the kind of post Warhammer community, post Warhammer TV, more open and welcoming and interactive Games Workshop. I mean, we've been really, really lucky, haven't we, on this channel, that we've, you know, chatted to a lot of people at Games Workshop and had a lot of support from them as well. Mm-hmm. Where I think, you know, 10 years ago, maybe that wasn't a thing. They were very kind of closed and secretive, and they probably wouldn't share what's coming in 2 weeks' time, you know, that we've seen on these previews, let alone here's what's coming next week post they put up. Mm. And, you know, we mentioned it earlier that the kind of the video tutorials, and then they discovered a sense of humor. And, you know, when stuff leaked, rather than trying to, you know, throw out cease and desists, they embraced it and made a funny video, which then kind of hyped it up even more.
And I just think they've done,
exactly, I just think they've done a brilliant job with Warhammer community, and all the guys involved in that just kind of have made the hobby even more enjoyable recently.
Yeah.
I think back to when I think the turning point, one of the turning points, was Magnus in the bin.
Yes.
that was brilliant. Yeah. I think that set the tone, didn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. Really cool. Jay, what's your second choice?
My second choice is looking at everybody else's armies and models to get inspiration. So I back in the day, I used to trawl through the project logs on websites like Warseer. Yeah. And just look at all the different armies people are doing. And, you know, you'd be into a particular faction, so you'd go straight to the project logs for that faction, just see all the cool armies that people are painting and converting up. And, I mean, with, like, all the different Facebook groups you can get into now, you just see that every day streaming down my phone, just seeing pictures of people's cool armies and units and things like that. It really gets the creative juices flowing, I think.
Yeah. Excellent. My second choice is Warhammer events. So I'm talking just general, really. And this kind of touches on your third choice, Matt, with, you know, so many big Warhammer fans being in the same space. So we're talking open days, we're talking Warhammer Fest, we're talking tournaments. Just the general event, you can feel the buzz, even down to, like, you know, when we go to the Unicorn events and things. It's just great just talking about the hobby and playing games and being in that atmosphere. I just love it. I think it's brilliant. I'd go to more events if I could, especially now.
That's something I've really missed, like, the last however many weeks it's been, because slap bang in the middle of that was the GT for Age of Sigmar. I never entered a GT before, but was really looking forward to going to it. I was going to bring the dragon, bring the silly list to Tuck to the Throne of Skulls. It wouldn't win many games, but it'd be fun.
Yeah. So, well, we would have had the team events. Was that in June?
That was as well, yeah. I was really looking forward to that as well.
Yeah.
And again, you start to see the same kind of familiar faces, and you get to know some people, the kind of social side of it as well.
Yeah. Excellent. Pete, what's your second choice?
My second choice is the ability to transport yourself to a different world.
Oh, I like it.
I think one of the things that, especially in lockdown at the moment and things like that, lots of people have got lots of things going on in their life. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure we've all been through patches where you go, for crying out loud, you know, stop the world, I want to get off. And I've always found that the hobby has allowed me to go somewhere different. Mm-hmm. And I know I'm not on my own in that, you know, even just, you can pick up a book and do it. You can pick up some painting and do it. You could play a game. It just allows you to kind of go click. And then when you come back to the real world, it's a slightly better place.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, that's. I think that's true for so many people. It's a good escape, I think, is a good way to look at it. Yeah.
No, I mean, yeah, if you want to escape from the world we're currently living, I imagine the Warhammer 40,000 universe is a good place to go. I think it's much better than that.
Well, if you remember a few podcasts back, Jay, you were really into the idea of cleaning the Emperor's Palace, so...
Yeah. You know, so Edie's bra. No, Dave's bra, wasn't it?
Bra, yeah. Dave's bra. That was my outpost. That was such a cool top three. Right, we digress. Matt, what is your top choice?
So my top choice, and it's going to be a selfish one, this, but it's going to be the chance of being able to do Sprues and Brews, the website, the podcast, all the YouTube stuff. It started off as a little idea we had one time, because we'd met you guys at a games day, hadn't I?
Yeah.
And we'd been getting into the hobby, and we'd been involved in, well, more so you, but a video games kind of website / YouTube / media experience, hadn't we? Mm-hmm. And I think I'd mentioned to you that we should really do some kind of like Warhammer content. We knocked around a few ideas, and eventually I think we did a couple of unboxings, didn't we, is how it started. And what are we, 3 years later now? It's just kind of spiraled from there into we had 60,000 views a month on the website. We never in a million years thought we'd, get anywhere near that big. And it's just really nice to see that, people are actually listening to the show. obviously we've done something right, which is really kind of... really nice, isn't it?
It's nothing makes me smile more than reading really lovely comments from people about how they've enjoyed the show, or we've inspired them to do something. Or I think it was Fabius Fulgrim on Twitter.
Fabius Fulgrim, yeah.
We've got him converting models. I can't remember what he was converting now. Whatever we discussed last week, anyway. fired him up on that. So yeah, I love it. I think for me, the birth of Sprues and Brews is I was kind of going away from video games, and I was getting more into the hobby, because as much as I still love video games, I think the hobby for me is the fact that you're building and painting something, and it's there. It's not like a game that you finish and that's it. You might trade in or whatever.
The thing that converted me from sort of video games back into the hobby, I've never been out of the hobby, but was the fact that I knew that I could show somebody, look, I was painting this last night, versus, here's some pixels on my computer.
But no, I've really enjoyed the Sprues and Brews journey. It's worth saying that, we do this as a hobby. I'd like to think we'd never, charge a paywall kind of entry fee. It's kind of, we enjoy doing this and we want to share it with people. So, hopefully we get to continue doing that.
Get paid. I'm going. Yeah. I'm logging off.
Yeah, we all have sort of real life jobs in air commas. So yeah, this is a really good thing that we do because we love doing it. So
yeah,
my top choice. No, it's not my top choice. It's Jay's top choice.
Jay, I haven't really logged off, Dave. I was still here. Well, my top choice was also going to be working on Sprues and Brews with you guys. It's really cool. I just like the connection to the community. Before this, my only Warhammer partners were Matt and Dave, but now I know tons of people from doing Sprues and Brews and going to different tournaments that we go to now, and people like Pete coming onto the show, who ordinarily I would never even get to speak to a Golden Demon woman. So yeah, Sprues and Brews, definitely number one best thing about the hobby for me.
Well, my top choice was going to be just having battles, really. I think that's what it mainly comes down to. Because obviously the hobby is made up primarily of building models, painting models, and battling with them. And I've always enjoyed, back in the day, I absolutely hated painting. And I didn't particularly enjoy building them, but I really enjoyed the games. And that's there's nothing truer now in... I'm looking forward to playing my wife at the weekend, because I've not rolled any dice in a semi-competitive state for so long. I've really missed it. So
you're going to have to give us the blow-by-blow battle report on this day.
What armies are you using?
I don't know. I think we're going to play Sigmar rather than 40K.
Are you on the Stormcast?
Yeah, I think it'll be Stormcast versus Iron Jaws. So potentially Stormcast Dragon, more Crusher, and then a couple of units potentially. So,
be careful, Dave. I'd let her win if I were you.
Yeah. Don't put the Ethereal Amulet on your Maw Crusher.
No, there'd be nothing like that. It'll be a real cutback. What actually slightly inspired me in what brought the topic around is, I don't know if you guys watch any mini wargaming stuff, but one of those, one of the main guys, started a video campaign with his wife who'd never played before, and she's quite sort of got into it now. And he started filming battle reports of her and stuff, and he started small, you know, a hero, couple of units, really breaking down how it works, and then gradually built up the rules and stuff, and now he's doing like a full blown campaign with her. So
nice.
That's really cool. The joys of lockdown. Pete, do you want to finish this off with your top choice?
Yeah, mine kind of combines a couple of yours as well. It's inspiration from the community.
Yeah.
And it's not just people posting nice things of what they're doing. It's people actually going, I like that, or how have you done that? It's the whole, so it's kind of community and inspiration mashed together.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I agree with, you know, the comment on Twitter. I think Twitter is is weirdly one platform that within the hobby is so positive.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you go onto certain other social medias, it's perhaps less positive. But I was going to say, and I don't know about you, you guys obviously talk to each other and show each other pictures of models. So you get inspired and kind of get lots of little tips from that. And I've got a group of friends who I do it as well. And I think once you hit places like Twitter, you suddenly expand that out even more. So like I say, I think inspiration is probably my top choice.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. I think there were some really good choices there, folks. Yeah, some really good choices. We haven't quite finished there, though, because we are going to take a pause and we're going to come back with the community choices. Right, it is the final part of the podcast, and it's the part where we read out your choices that you've submitted via social media. So over on Facebook, Ian Spears' third choice is a good friendly, in inverted commas, battle.
Ooh.
His second choice is the sense of achievement when painting and building up an army, which we've talked about quite a lot on this podcast. And his top choice is without doubt the community. I sense this will be a big one this week. Absolutely. Whether that's physically or through podcast, winky face, of course, YouTube, Twitch videos, or Discord channels. Brian Dennis, his third choice, the narrative and the settings. His second choice is the escapism. And his top choice again is sense of community.
Amazing.
Over to Twitter, Matt.
Well, over on Twitter, we've got Andy Wood, number three, playing at the Purple Sparkly Unicorn Club Nights. I do miss those guys. Number two, Theory Hammering, writing lists, or more recently, thoughts on narrative 40K. Mm-hmm. And starting and finishing projects. Fabius Fulgrim's third choice is gaming. They're not a competitive gamer, but they enjoy the social side of it. Number two, The Law. They enjoy a good Black Library book. And number one, sitting down at my hobby desk and just losing myself and forgetting the stresses of life while listening to Sprues and Brews. Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Daz Moore, the awesome supportive community, including the Warhammer community team, stunning models that we get to paint and play games with, and I love opportunities we get in the hobby to meet new people and make new friends. I think that's a big one, especially from the kind of tournament gaming side of it that we've kind of, I suppose, been exposed to more recently, haven't we?
Yeah.
Pandora's Bits Box, number three, the awesome models available and the opportunities to share creatively. Number two, the games, all of the games. Number one, the community. Until immersing myself in the community, I've never experienced such a constant source of friendly, awesome, inspiring and helpful people. That's really cool.
Nice.
Yeah.
The Rising Ape, number three, the games, immersive, complex lore with easy to follow rules. Number two, the minis. Always loved GW's models, but the Scubs now are spectacular. Yeah, I mean, GW are outdoing themselves with every kit they put out at the minute, aren't they?
Yeah. Yeah.
And number one, the community. No one local to play with except my kids means the community really keeps my hobby alive. And then honourable mention, Sprues and Brews.
Hey. Hey.
Tom Landry, number three, going to and playing games at events. Number two, feeling part of a shared community that I can talk to about the hobby without needing to know anything else about them. and number one, the best friends I've made over the years from playing hobby hangouts and attending events together. Dr. Octagon, number three, the law, number two, the chance to be creative, and number one, the taste of paint. You really shouldn't be eating your paint. Let's put a safety warning out there. Pete Jarman, number one, the Orc truck sprue. It's great for all kinds of conversions. You know, that is a really good kit. It's to hack up and use for your Orky conversions. Number two, the warmongers hashtag. It's got my hobby fire stoked and burning bright, just waiting on the kids to let me have time to enjoy it. Get the kids involved. Get them around me. And then number three, the Orc truck sprue. Did I mention it's great? It's a great kit. And then finally, Nicholas says, number three, the creativity displayed in our community. It's definitely the catalyst to my own. Number two, the lore. And number one, the endless hours of conversion work possible. The tactile nature combined with the arty side is priceless for me. So yeah, really nice choice of top threes there this week.
Yeah, really good. Thanks for all your top threes, guys. What's next week's top three, Matt?
So next week, there have been lots of really cool limited edition models, and we want to know what your top three limited release models are over the years. These could be the Golden Demon ones, or like we've seen recently, the kind of store opening or anniversary models that we've got. So yeah, lots of models to pick from there.
Excellent. You can get your top three picks in early by using our social media, which all links are at the end of the podcast. Pete, you do not get away with leaving this podcast without declaring what is your favorite sprue and what is your favorite brew.
I've always found sprue a really difficult one, and my fallback is always the skull sprue, the one with all the skulls on.
All the skulls all the time.
Yeah.
Blood God.
But I reckon actually the Wrathmonger kit, because the sprue, they have so many spares, it is beyond belief. So you've got scorpion tails, you've got pincer claws, different heads, etc.
Yeah.
It's not just corn. They can be used for lots of different things. So I think for the sprue, it has to be the Wrathmonger.
Okay.
And brew, Black Forest hot chocolate.
Okay.
I was thinking, what do I do? You know, there's loads of drinks I like, you know, alcoholic, non-alcoholic, etc. And I thought, actually, the one thing that come Christmas I will go out on a mission to have is the Black Forest hot chocolate from a particular coffee chain. And it's kind of, yeah, it has to be that one.
That sounds so much more upmarket than just a hot chocolate.
Yeah.
It's like classy. It's a classy hot chocolate, that is.
It's got all sorts. It's got cream and it's got syrup and all sorts. To be honest, it's probably a meal in a glass.
We are going to be sharing Pete's images on the podcast page. If you listen to us via Apple Podcasts or Spotify, if you head on to spruesandbrews.com and check out the podcast post on that, you'll be able to check out those images. If people wanted to follow your exploits, Pete, how would they do so?
Well, I am on Instagram and Twitter as @runebrush. So it's runebrush, all in one word. I think, to be honest, I've had runebrush handle since like 2003. So pretty much anywhere you find runebrush will be me. I have got a Facebook page. I forget to post to it all the time. So, yeah, it's probably better for Twitter and Instagram.
Excellent. Cool. Well, thank you very much for joining us. Maybe we'll be able to get you on at some point in the future again.
More than happy to. It's been a lovely experience. Thank you. Thank you for going gentle with me.
And we'll have to start our game at some point, you know, when the world returns to normality, won't we?
Yes, most definitely. I was going to say, I think most people are starting to get a bit deprived with not having a Warhammer World trip. So I think definitely there's going to be a Warhammer World trip on the cards.
Yeah. Get those tables booked.
Yep, yeah, too right.
Definitely. Right, that brings us to the end of another podcast. We'll be back again next week with episode 85. So until then, we'll speak to you all very soon. Bye.
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 Thank you for listening to the Sprues and Brews podcast. If you like what you've been listening to, please do give us a share and a comment if you're listening via Apple Podcasts. For further content, please check out spruesandbrews.com, and you can contact us on Twitter @spruesandbrews or over on Facebook, facebook.com/spruesandbrews.